Good morning, 5:11 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola morning. It's a little bit chilly, not quite as chilly as it has been recently, but, you know, it's getting warmer again when it's still, you know, it's actually kind of nice out, frankly, because it's my second day of jeans wearing this year. Since the summer anyway, so yeah, I will
pantalones.
I know it's I'm not super happy about that, but you know, that's fine. I don't mind it occasionally. 437-1620 is my phone number. 437-1620, that is the phone number. Lots of stuff to get to this morning. Interesting. You've got I think maybe, and I'm saying maybe because this is still not a resolve they're going to fight against it, but one of the big news stories from yesterday, I saw it in a lot of different places, but it hasn't been focused on in a lot of the news that I've seen. It's kind of like, you know, 10th story down in several different places, is that there was a ruling in Missouri that the practice of taking the seller's and the buyer's commission for a home out of the seller's price is unacceptable, is illegal. And the realtors are now liable for $1.8 billion in damage because basically the jury decided that that leads to the inflation of commissions in an uncompetitive way. And this is something that could even balloon to as much as $5 billion because there's as much as a triple damages possibility for this. And if you haven't been following this case, and I had not been, I didn't even know this was happening. But, you know, typically when you buy a house, you know, it's 6% commission. Standard, 3% for each side, seller and buyer, and the seller pays that out of the price you pay them for the house. And my understanding, I'm a little bit thin on this, but I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, please feel free to text me. But my understanding is that, you know, your seller's agent and your buyer's agent sort of legally are both obligated to represent the seller. It's kind of a weird situation because you think, well, why am I paying a commission to somebody who's representing the seller? But okay, but there it is. And now, basically, what this court ruled is that that is anti-competitive, uncompetitive, a kind of, you know, a monopoly-esque. I mean, it's not a monopoly, but, you know, that's the problem with this practice. And now it looks like, you know, you've got an awful lot of money could have to be paid to people for paying too much in the premiums, in the commissions to the sellers and to the buyer's agents. So, again, the real estate firms, big real estate firms that were on the receiving end of this class action lawsuit, they say they're going to fight it. The National Association of Realtors has said that they're going to, you know, they're not going to just accept this ruling. But if it holds, either because they don't fight it or because on appeal it holds, you're talking about a fairly significant change in the way real estate transacts in the nation. Because now you could basically have, you know, sellers get a seller's agent and buyers can hire their own agent. Maybe it could be a change in the 3%. You know, you might be able to try to get somebody to work for a percent and a half. But basically, if you're hiring your own and separate from the seller, all of a sudden it might be that, well, home prices go down, possibly. I mean, there's all kinds of possible implications here. And again, there were 260,000 homes, the sellers of 260,000 homes in Missouri, Kansas, and Illinois. And this is between 2015 and 2022. And they objected to the commissions and the structure of it. And the federal jury in Kansas City ruled for them to the tune of $1.7 billion. And that could be at triple damages because there's a, you know, that's the way some of these civil lawsuits work. So could be a huge thing. But I'm kind of being cautious about that because you never know, you know, how things hold up when they go through the appeals process. But pretty significant story yesterday. Also significant story, the kind of thing that might show up in my Friday memorial service. We're going to change all the names of all the birds that were named for people or might have anything even remotely objectionable or offensive to them. I'm not kidding.
So I hope this news does not get to Milton because, you know, changing the names of those buildings. Now we're going to start changing the names of birds.
Right. So
he was talking about the slippery slope.
The American Ornithological Society is going to change the names of the English language names of any bird species currently named after any person, which is common. It's common enough that if you discover a bird, right, first to identify, first to name, and so you have like Anna's hummingbird, Gamble's quail, Lewis's woodpecker, Bewick's wren, Bullock's oriole, and I mean, you know, there's like 80 of them or something, 70 to 80 species, and they're in Canada and in United States. And it's about 6-7% of the entire species in our region, and they're going to rename all of them because what they had originally thought about doing was just renaming the ones that have, like, troublesome names or were named for people who are, you know, under the current sensibilities unacceptable. Like Confederate General John McCown had discovered a bird. It's McCown's Longspur. Well, in 2020, they renamed that one already. They got to the Confederate General bird already. That's the thick-billed Longspur now. But others could come because others might have, you know, associations with people that we don't want to affirm. Not because they didn't discover the bird, which is the reason you give them the name, but because they discovered a bird and they had politics we don't like. You know, the new standard is it's not enough to do the thing. You got to do the thing and be approved by us morally, culturally, socially, politically, or whatever. So that's already been renamed, but other ones that might be objectionable. And what they eventually decided was they're just going to change them all. They're not going to create a policy of good names and bad names. They're just for people. They're just going to say all people names have to go. And their argument is, well, this allows us a chance to fix the mistake of naming birds after people and to instead name them with names that sort of fit the bird. So instead of Wilson's Warbler, you're going to have the Yellow Warbler, maybe, or the Golden Wing Warbler, maybe. You know, things that are more apt for the particular bird and the description of them. But, for example, you've got a guy named Wilson Snipe. Or sorry, the Wilson's Snipe is Wilson is the guy. Snipe is the bird. And they're going to get rid of his name, even though he was the father of modern ornithology. So now you're going to have no birds named after the guy who founded the science. It's just, you know, cancel culture goes its way. And a lot of the people who were on the like the commission to decide about this, they said, well, in the beginning, we weren't for this, but they persuaded me over time. I mean, okay, that's fine. I understand. But to me, sort of always, and what next? You know, what's the next thing that we're going to sanitize for modern sensibilities? But it did give me an opportunity to look at a list of bird names that are, well, I would want to say them carefully on the radio. Because they might be problematic just because they're problematic, not because they're named for people. I'll give you a list. There was one website that had a list of 10. The blue-footed booby. What's wrong with that? Save the boobies. That's what I always say all the time. You ready? The Andean cock of the rock. You don't know why that would be problematic. The Dick Sissel is one that made the list. The American woodcock. You might be noticing a pattern here. The great tit. I love a great tit. What's wrong with that? Oh, hey, it's 5:20. So, you know, the phrase tit for a bird, that existed long before it referred to something else. Okay, long before. Old English, the word tit means little. Okay? So, you know, it's just... There you go, just so you know. The Himalayan snowcock is another one that they say is problematic. The rough-faced shag. Yeah, baby. The horned screamer. The American, and I want to read this one very slowly just to make sure I get it right. The American bush tit. Just saying that word visually looks like another word that I shall not say on the air. And then this is my very favorite. This is, I would preserve the name of this bird at any expense. You ready for this?
Yeah.
It's the satanic goat sucker.
No.
Yeah, really? The satanic goat sucker, which is a double win. I mean, it's Eurystopatus diabolicus. First, I mean, that a bird is named satanic is amazing. And that its second name isn't just like the satanic tit, you know, like the satanic warbler. Okay. It's the satanic goat sucker.
Somebody really hated that bird.
Oh, man. Ugh. I found it. I'm going to hate on it. That's right. It's a cool-looking bird. These are all cool-looking birds. I'll be honest with you, looking at all these different birds yesterday, the thing that occurred to me is, oh, God, I'm going to become one of these people. I'm going to start buying binoculars and tripods and, you know, getting my stakeout gear, and I'm going to be that guy, you know? I just, because, aside, you know, we just finished with the fair, and... When I go to the fair, one of the things I like to do at the fair, rides are great, food is great, entertainment is great. Okay, sure, the shows, the tigers, the monkeys, the, you know, the bearded lady made half of a dragon or whatever, okay? But just for me, like for my money, I love the display booths. You know, the buildings full of the competition displays. And I will tell you, it's one of those things where if you walk fast, you don't notice. It's easy to just walk past and be like, look, plants. You know, like, it's easy to do that. But if you take the time and slow down in the art exhibitions or in the, 3D or 2D, and even some of the kids' stuff or the photography, but if you go through some of the, like, you know, the award-winning animals, I'm just telling you, the birds in particular are amazing. They are really gorgeous and varied and exotic looking, and I don't know, I'm just saying. So I'm not planning to become one of these bird people, and if you are, that's great, wonderful for you. Of course, you know birds aren't real. Just, I don't want to mess with you. I know you're part of the conspiracy. I know you pretending to love to watch birds is all part of what the CIA wants the rest of us to believe. But okay, so if you don't know, the birds aren't real. Jake, do you know the birds aren't real thing?
I am hip to birds aren't real.
It's
yes,
my favorite satire site. It's not, and they will not say it's satire, but you know, it's to satirize all the conspiracy theories because you know birds aren't real. They're CIA drones surveilling you. That's, I mean, just think about it. Okay, just think about it.
Yeah.
They have to recharge at night, which is why you never see birds at night. They got to go back to home base and get recharged.
Yeah.
Duh. So anyway.
And they land on power lines, and that's how
right.
they recharge.
That's right. That's how they're getting their midday
recharge. And they're uploading
recharge.
The data to the
exactly
government.
Exactly right. Know?
If it flies, it spies.
That's 100% true. So.
That's great.
So anyway, they're going to rename all the birds and make them politically correct. This is wonderful. 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, amazed. I'm Andrew McKay.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Hurricane season is here, and now is the time to make a plan and know your zone.
In the case of an evacuation, have a plan to go to a hurricane shelter, hotel, or stay with a family or friends.
If you're ordered to evacuate, you need to leave. You can rebuild your home, but you cannot rebuild your life. This hurricane season, know your zone. Know your home. Learn more at floridadisaster.org.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
My dad has a cold, but also has high blood pressure. That's why I got him Vicks DayQuil High Blood Pressure for max strength daytime relief. Unlike some ordinary cold medicines, it's specially formulated for people like my dad. DayQuil High Blood Pressure is sugar-free, alcohol-free, and decongestant-free.
Vicks DayQuil High Blood Pressure. The daytime, non-drowsy, coughing, aching, fever, sore throat, cold, and flu for people with high blood pressure.
Like my dad.
Medicine. Use as directed.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknight 7 to 10, before WEAR-TV News, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Six innings without a hit, three in a row here in the seventh.
Diamondbacks had their chances numerous times. Texas had chances as well, and nobody was able to score in the first six innings last night. Top of the seventh with a man on second and third, no out. Garver singles up the middle and gets a guy home, and they go up 1-0, but no big deal, right? Still three innings to go. Bottom of the seventh, Diamondbacks don't score. Top of the eighth, bases loaded. Diamondbacks, Garver's up. Or sorry, Texas is up.
Cracked his bat. Rolled it short. Perdomo's there. Kevin Ginkle's out of the bases loaded jam.
Nothing happened. Still 1-0. The game's ahead. You still got six outs to go before you get eliminated from the World Series if you're the Diamondbacks fans. They get nothing done in the bottom of the eighth. Top of the ninth. Man on first and second. Nobody out. Helmed at the plate.
Have the offense show up. And this is going to be the clincher. Hot shot in the center field. Three consecutive hits in the ninth. The ball gets by. It's all the way to the track. And goes all the way to the wall and two runs score. Heim to third. It's 3-0 Texas.
Oh my God. If you're the center fielder, I feel so bad for him. It was a hit anyway. It was going to score one. But Heim gets it past the, you know, just to the left of the second baseman, and the center fielder just misses. He goes to scoop it up, and he just misses it. Goes right under his glove, goes all the way to the wall. The right fielder has to field it in two-run score. So now it's 3-0 Texas with Diamondbacks on the verge of elimination. Texas at the chance to win their first World Series ever. And later on in that same inning, Marcus Semien, man on third, two outs.
Runner at third, two out. Here's an 0-1 to Semien. In the air to left center field. Gurriel's back.
Home run deep left, 5-0 Texas. So Arizona trying to get something going, two outs, bottom of the ninth, on the verge of being eliminated from the World Series, and Texas winning their first ever. Marte at the plate.
It took 35 years for this franchise to get to the playoffs. It took them a half century to get to the World Series. Can they finish it off? Two balls and two strikes on Marte. In their 63rd season. It's happened! The Texas Rangers win the World Series!
Man, he took two in a row, and the first one he took was close, and the second one was on the outside edge, curveball, easy strike. You don't want to be the guy who strikes out looking to lose the World Series for your team ever. Swing the bat, bro. 527 on News Radio 92.3. Congratulations to the Texas Rangers. First time in their history they've gotten a World Series win. And, man, if you're long-suffering, think about it, like 63 years. 63 years. You know, there was a time when the White Sox, the Red Sox, and the Cubs had not won a game in a long time, and or had not won a series in a long time, but they at least had some, you know, under their belts. Well, some did anyway. This is 63 years long-suffering. I know because I'm a Cardinals fan, and we kept that suffering going in 2011. But anyway, congratulations to the Rangers fans winning the World Series. Now everybody's even all over again. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's been subpoenaed to produce documents in a California criminal case. She informed the House of Representatives Wednesday. She didn't give any specific info about the case, but it's reportedly related to last year's attack against her husband. One of the five officers involved in the death of Tyree Nichols has taken a plea deal. A lawyer for Desmond Mills said Wednesday he's changing his not guilty plea to guilty. Details of that agreement have not yet been revealed. And Republican senators tried to confirm some military promotions yesterday, but they ran into a brick wall named Tommy Tuberville.
I will keep my hold in place until the Pentagon follows the law or the Democrats change the law. Every day this continues is a day that Democrats think abortion is more important than the nomination and our military.
Republican Senators Dan Sullivan from Alaska, Joni Ernst from Iowa, Lindsey Graham, Todd Young from Indiana, Mitt Romney of Utah requested votes on each senior officer by unanimous consent. It took several hours, but Tuberville blocked each request.
Yeah, and again, this is the ongoing protest by Tommy Tuberville against the policy of the Pentagon paying for abortion travel, allowing for abortion leave. And, you know, his argument is that this is a violation of the longstanding principle that you do not have the federal government pay for or provide for abortions. And he says, it's up to you. You could just change this policy and we'd be done. And this is the thing that I have power to stop, and so I'm going to stop it. And, you know, the question of whether it's affecting readiness, it's sort of, as a civilian, it's hard to believe it's not affecting readiness in some sense or other, but that's kind of the issue. By the way, the top Marine general hospitalized, raising the question of, you know, hey, if we don't get this stuff figured out, you know, we've got challenges in our leader if somebody gets sick or whatever. So, David, thanks so much for the update. I appreciate it. Time will tell whether Tuberville gives in or whether the policy gets changed or whether the Senate works around him. Like I say, those are your three options at the moment.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The Israel Defense Forces are slowly moving toward Gaza City, but losses are mounting.
Israeli fighter jets are overhead, and days after this ground operation began, the Israelis are taking heavy losses inside Gaza. They say the death toll this week is now at 17 soldiers killed in battles with Hamas militants.
Fox's Trey Yinks in southern Israel. Four nationals are passing through the Rafah crossing, leaving Gaza for Egypt this morning, but so far just five Americans have made it to safety, with the Biden administration saying about 400 other Americans are stranded in Gaza. 242, that is the number of people held captive by Hamas. The Israeli military updating that number this morning. And Minnesota going to court to try and keep President Trump off the state's ballot. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now it is mostly clear skies, 42 degrees in Pensacola. A Crestview police officer was hurt in a three-vehicle crash as he was responding to a call last night. That happened on State Road 85 and Griffith Avenue at about 8 o'clock last night. FHP says that officer rear-ended another vehicle at a congested intersection as he was responding to an emergency call. That vehicle then hit a third vehicle. The Crestview officer reported minor injuries. There were no other injuries in that crash. Families that have taken up residence at the homeless camp in Jones Swamp apparently will be allowed to stay.
The owner came out yesterday and took all the papers down that they put up for us being evicted today and said that we didn't have to go nowhere. If it ain't him saying we have to leave, don't listen to nobody.
That resident talked with Channel 3 earlier this week. Those notices had been put up that residents had to be off the property by yesterday. There was no reason given by the Area Housing Commission for the change in policy. The Small Business Administration has now announced that economic injury disaster loans are available in Northwest Florida due to the drought conditions that began last month. The declaration includes Escambia and Santa Rosa counties. The program is available to eligible farm-related and non-farm-related entities that have suffered financial losses as a direct result of the drought. The loan amount can be up to $2 million with interest rates of 4% for small businesses and 2.375% for private nonprofit organizations. The Florida Treasury has invested another $120 million in Israel bonds. Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Petrona says that move follows the recent purchase of another $25 million in bonds from the country.
We've got almost 700,000 Jewish Americans in the state of Florida. They approach us, hey, would you want to buy some of our bonds? We're definitely in capital raising mode because we've got our hands, you know, fully committed and we're going to need some resources.
And Petrona says Florida's current total investment in Israeli bonds is $200 million. That's the largest total ever held at one time by the Florida Treasury. The latest spat between Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill is figuring out how to provide aid for Israel. Despite opposition from Democrats and even some Republicans, Congressman Matt Gaetz says he stands behind the $14 billion standalone package that doesn't include aid to Ukraine. That money would come out of the IRS budget.
The IRS used to have a $12 billion budget. That swelled to an $80 billion budget as a consequence of the Inflation Reduction Act. And so this would peel back $14 billion of that and I think let our people off the mat when it comes to excessive government weaponization. And that is exactly what these IRS agents would be intended to do.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says it's not even worth a House vote as it's dead on arrival in the Senate. He backs the Biden administration in backing aid for Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, and the southern border. 534, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We do have a beautiful sunny day in store today with chilly temperatures, 67 degrees for your high, overnight tonight temperatures in the 40s. As you go into Friday, starting to warm up, mostly sunny skies, high near 73. Friday night temperatures dropping near 55 degrees. Getting into the mid-70s as we go into Saturday, 75 degrees with mostly sunny skies. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Right now, 42 in Pensacola, 44 in Gulf Breeze, 36 in Milton. Our next news at 6, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
I'm Claire Stewart with the University of West Florida. The UWF Historic Trust is hosting the third annual Bootleg Ball event on Friday, January 12, 2024. Join Wendy Davis on the Pensacola Expert Panel and learn how to support the Historic Trust while having a roaring good time. Tune in today at 9 a.m. to learn more about the Bootleg Ball. That's today on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3.
Have you been thinking about getting fit but don't know where to start? Why not start at Running Wild?
Running Wild specializes in fitting every person to the proper shoe, apparel, and training designed for their unique needs. An essential resource to the community on all things fitness related, Running Wild takes pride in serving, teaching, and encouraging customers to reach new goals. Start your fitness journey with the experts at Running Wild in Pensacola and Fairhope. Follow on Facebook or shop online at WeRunWild.com.
This message is sponsored by the Florida A&M University Medical Marijuana Education and Research Initiative, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Mary on Demand is live. Start your marijuana education journey today. Learn at your own pace and check out the Medical Marijuana Education Series. You decide what you'd like to learn and when with Mary on Demand. Visit mary.famu.edu. That's mmeri.famu.edu. And remember, recreational marijuana is still illegal in Florida. Mary, educate, learn, talk.
News Radio 92.3 is Pensacola's radio home for informative, local, and dependable news and talk. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Morning, 538, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Yesterday we had a good conversation like we always do with Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves, talking particularly about the new substation and red light cameras and all of this stuff. And, you know, it's lots of news. I'm, you know, kind of annoyed the mayor keeps putting out all this news all the time. And so it creates like I got to focus on him all the time, which is good, though, because there's a lot of things that make sense that they're doing. Mayor Reeves, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
I am here.
Outstanding. Okay, so we have lot of stuff to get to. I'm going to start with the smallest thing first. Fishing on Three Mile Bridge is, in fact, prohibited, and they are working on signs, and they were already working on them when we talked about it last week. Is that right?
That is 100% correct. We've actually, I met with FDOT on many things in Chipley probably almost a month ago. We drove over our staff administration and met on lots of stuff, but that was one of the topics we discussed. Is it's a safety issue. I mean, we can't have people fishing and hitting cars behind them and bicyclists trying to get by. I mean, it's clearly a safety issue. And so there are actually, I would expect, I know our PPD has been notified, Fish and Wildlife has been notified by FDOT that this is happening, that we expect signs up in the next 2 weeks.
The one thing we don't want to hear for a police officer is the jig made me jag. that's what we don't want to hear from the driver.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right. You had some. You're doing a lot. You're putting out too many big news stories at a time. I'm gonna complain about this. All right.
I understand.
The first one, and we didn't really talk about it last week, except to mention that I agree with you. Red light cameras. You're gonna do a pilot program. A handful of intersections to start. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So we're gonna probably look at 12 to 15. Obviously, you can look at the data that we shared with the media yesterday. That of our 16-hour study. At 17 different intersections, 26 approaches. Remember, that's one direction at a light. So what we're looking at is probably 12 to 15 approaches. So that may only be, you know, if it's a total intersection, you know, we're talking about certainly less than 10 total intersections. But, at the end of the day, we know it's where the crashes are happening. We know that it's 5,000-plus hours of police work for just the primary officer. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, the sociology behind any kind of blowback or protest to this, I'm really not following. I've even been presented that it's somehow, you know, anti-Republican. And I would, I'm saying is I don't know how it's a partisan platform for people to not get hurt or killed at a red light. What I look at is how do we keep people safe? How do we keep our police out in your neighborhood, not at a traffic accident? And, there is one foolproof plan that everyone can abide by. Just don't run the red light. You won't know they're there, I promise you. That's it. And so rationalizing the vibrancy of our community has to be derived in somehow injuring or killing people at intersections doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
As a long time, not lifelong, I was definitely a Democrat at one time, a liberal at one time, okay, but as a long time Republican, I'm pretty sure our party platform is not built around running red lights and defending those who do. So just to be clear about that, you know, I'm in favor of law enforcement, okay? The question, though, is you're going to roll this out as a pilot program. I have to assume that the goal, since the goal is to, as quickly as possible, reduce danger and or crashes, that you'd be rolling it out at the major intersections, the biggest high-profile intersections, and then you're looking to see, what, 6 months, how down the road, how many people are running red lights, what collision rates, that kind of stuff. Is that what we're expecting?
Exactly. We have a wealth of data over the past decade that suggests where these accidents are happening. And then, of course, now even more surgical data exactly, you know, and talk about this summer, what happened on a 16-hour period at all these intersections. So we are fully stocked with data to make good decisions on where these go. Now, what I was saying is, you know, we're not going to go out and pick 50 intersections to do this. I mean, there, you know, we want to see how it works. Are there some blind spots for us in how it operates? You know, we want to make sure that we aren't overdoing it, that because what's the goal here? Safety is the goal. So right. We want to see in 6 months or 8 months, 9 months, a year, that we went from 65 crashes at, say, 9th and Bayou to 20 or less. You know, we want to see that we're making progress before we were to go too, you know, heavy-handed across the city. So we'll pick our biggest pain points, and I've mentioned before, Fairfield and Davis, 9th and Bayou, 9th and Airport are our year-over-year worst intersections for crashes. So, again, we're not finalizing this list quite yet, but it's a pretty safe assumption there'll be some interaction with some cameras at those three intersections.
And I like that you mentioned that it was particularly at Davis and Fairfield, you're talking about the east-west, not necessarily the north-south. So it's the approaches, not the intersection. And even, I think, Chase and Gregory and Ninth was one that was mentioned as well, which, you know, I can see how that would be an issue. So I'm the one question, I am looking forward to this. I think that it will be effective. The only thing that annoys me is we haven't done it before, because I agree with the reasoning that you cut down on property damage, you cut down on damage to people and loss of life, and all you're really doing is enforcing a law that people should already be following to begin with. One question I have, what's the cost involved to, for example, install the equipment, monitor and maintain, handle the requests, send out the mailers? I know this is not a money-making proposition, and even if it is, that's going to go back into public safety. But what is the kind of investment we're looking at to set up the pilot program?
Yeah, ultimately how the mechanics of the cost work is there's ultimately some kind of monthly, I mean, I'm going to oversimplify this and basically say that it's some kind of monthly fee from the operator that, you know, that they're getting a certain percentage of ticket, you know, ticket violation revenue that helps offset their cost. It's ultimately, so there's not a big capital outlay on this that the city has to bear, but that's also why you wouldn't put one at, you know, all hundreds of intersections of the city, is because you're really trying to focus on areas that are pain points for safety you know, that have the traffic volume. So that's how it will work. It's not a big expense to us. There's some minor, you know, we're going to, like Gulf Breeze does, we're going to put signs up that say, you know, come when you approach the intersection that it's photo enforced. We're going to have those kinds of things. So we'll have some minimal expense on our side to get it set up. But it's really built into the operation. There's not a big upfront capital outlet.
All right. I got a couple of questions, follow-up questions on the red light camera thing. Everything is a little bit different process. Will PPD officers have final eyeballs on the tickets here in Pensacola to make sure that they're justified violations?
Absolutely. And I'll, the one time I can bring up a Blockbuster reference, me and you brothers in Blockbuster, is that, remember when you were supposed to drop the video off by noon and people would say that I dropped it off at 12:05 and we didn't actually bring anything until 4?
Yeah.
Same concept here. You know, anybody who says, well, I missed it by an inch, there's going to be some margin of error that's going to be allowed here. That's going to be looked at human eyes. So if you get a violation, it's clearly going to be a violation. That's what I could say at this point.
And yeah, I figured that was the case. I know it's good for people to be able to hear that. Second thing is, right. Though, as you mentioned, there's a revenue spinoff to the operating company, and there might theoretically be some revenue to us, which should go into public safety if it ever has to be a lot. But really, the goal is for it to be, you know, a losing proposition, right? The goal is to write no red light tickets, right?
Correct. I mean, and that's why I said people are like, well, is this some kind of revenue stream for the city? I hope not.
Right.
I mean, I hope that, you know, I hope what it is, you know, what I would be happy with is, look, if it's cost neutral, that helps us operate it, and we go from 65 crashes at 9th and Bayou or over 60 in every year in, year out, and we go to 15, that is worth its weight in gold. So, I mean, we're talking about lives that we are saving. So, you know, I hope it doesn't make money. If it does, as you mentioned, any money would go back to public safety. and even if it, fire or infrastructure.
Yeah, and honestly, even if, okay, let's say we put it in place, everybody stops running red lights, the company is losing money, and they come to us and say, hey, we're losing money, we got to change this, you need to pay for this service. Great. You know, we'll pay for it. It's better than hiring officers.
I would love to have.
Did
exactly.
You,
I would just, love to have the conversation where they have to, you know, I have to, you know, plead with them to charge us less money because we have no one running red lights.
Right.
I look forward very much to that conversation.
Purely a practical, I guess, political question. You're smart. Okay. You're not going to roll this out and then ask city council if they're willing to change the ordinance. I assume you've talked to enough city council members and briefed them that the changing of the ordinance is kind of a pro forma at this point. Is that your expectation?
I would think so. We certainly have, we think the citywide support and the infrastructure are already kind of in place to make sure that we can enforce this fairly.
Perfect. That's what I want. And I assume, but I just, you know, my job is to sometimes ask the questions instead of assuming. Man, you know, we always run out of time. This is so frustrating. I love the idea of the professional development. We'll have to get into that next time. But the program with PSC to teach people how to be leaders, because leadership is something you have to be taught, not something you just acquire because you're good at your base job. I love that premise. Wonderful premise. I did also want to just give you a moment to talk about the CareerSource Florida Board of Directors appointment. Kudos to you.
Yeah, thank you. And certainly grateful to Governor DeSantis for that appointment. We know how important workforce talent development is in any city in Florida. And you can think about very specific situations like for the city of Pensacola, ST Engineering. You know, what are we trying to do? We're trying to get that workforce built up and reap the benefits, the ROI of having a big company like that. And so so I'm really excited. I'm working with the Chamber and CareerSource Escarosa, Dr. McBride, to actually get a working group together before my first meeting to kind of make sure and just listen to the people that are really on the front lines of workforce development, make sure that when I go to Tallahassee and go to these board meetings that I'm representing ourselves well and representing our priorities well. So very excited for that. And it's a very important board. It's where the workforce dollars in the state of Florida go. So very excited for that opportunity.
No, it's a really good thing. It's quite an honor, frankly. And then we always like to end with a bit of a lightning round, just some fun questions that we ask you. First question is, do you wash your jeans in the washing machine? If so, how frequently? Do you go multiple wears before you wash them? There's a big online debate about this, and some people say you should never wash jeans.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to expose me a bit here. I'm not a big regular jean washer. I think you just got to let it ride a little bit. They never fit the same once you let them run through, I don't think. So, you know, I hate to say that. It makes me sound maybe not as clean as I need to be. But, you know, I'll let them run.
I'll let them run. No, it's true, because you wash them and they get smaller, and then you got to wear them back to the proper size. I mean, that's not fun.
Exactly.
Do you leave online reviews? Do you leave bad online reviews? Are you honest in that way, or do you participate in the reviewing system?
Probably not as much as I should on the positive side, because I've owned a business and I know how valuable those are. But no, usually if I've got a negative review, I email the person directly if I have a bad experience.
All right.
I mean, I just think, you know, that's how you help. You want to help a business, email the manager, you know, and say, hey, look, this is the experience I had. I mean, I think, you know, I think that's the most productive thing to help a small business, frankly. And I know I'm a little biased in that. But.
I'm going to ask you a question that may expose an age gap between us. And so please feel free to say you're not sure. But were you a Friends watcher with the passing of Matthew Perry? Do you have a favorite Friends episode? And if your answer is, I never really watch Friends, that's okay. I forgive you. You're a lot younger than I am.
Actually, you'll love this. You hit the nail on the head. I used to watch it because my mom used to watch it. So I used to see it, you know.
Man.
It would sound like I was making that up, you know, only to make you seem old. But
let me pull the pitchfork out of my bag. All right.
Yeah. I was playing with toys in the living room while she was watching it. Don't worry. So I am familiar.
Okay, so I've told this story a couple times, but I have to tell you because it's relevant right now. We used to have a front desk person, you know, a receptionist who was like just out of UWF 22 or whatever. And I was walking out one day, and I was just chatting with her, and she was watching something on her phone. And I said, oh, you know, what do you watch on your phone? And she said, oh, I'm watching this old TV show that my parents liked. Have you ever heard of it? It's called Friends.
Right. Exactly.
I just slunk out the store.
Exactly. 9 or 10 years old. Yeah, so I'd hear it in the background right before bedtime.
You were high on my list until that comment, but I'll allow it. DC Reeves is our mayor of Pensacola. As always, DC, thank you for the time, sir. I love some of these initiatives. They're very good. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And by the way, I have had a chance to look at some of the crash data that was the basis of the red light camera decision to do a pilot program. And there are some relatively surprising ones on here. The two that, and I guess maybe it's because at least one of the two of these, I don't really drive them that often, so I'm not as familiar. But the real problem spots for like straight through the red light running, this is one that, I don't know, maybe it's not surprising, is westbound going through 9th Avenue on Gregory as you're going towards I-110. Because if you're coming from Gulf Breeze, like the last light is at, you know, like the Starbucks corner, right? Isn't that the last light until you get to 9th Avenue? There's no lights. So traffic is going through there at a pretty good clip, and apparently people going west toward the interstate just can't wait to get to the interstate. 33 in the time period. That was actually the very top number on the list of the ones that they observed. And the other one that kind of caught me by surprise a little bit was, you know, we know about like Bayou and 9th and Airport and 9th, and those are high crash incidents. But the red light running at those two lights, 14 for Airport and 18 for Brent, and the really high one, or the really high ones, are apparently the people who drive on Fairfield and then up to where it becomes 12th. Apparently y'all are terrible because Fairfield and Davis had 30. Fairfield and 9th east-west had 30, and then Fairfield kind of sort of branches into becoming 12th at Bayou, 28. So that little stretch from I-110 through to Bayou on Fairfield/12th, that's a really bad area for people running red lights. So it's really obvious. I mean, you can look at the you know, the map of where you have traffic crashes, and you know where you have traffic crashes? Basically, you have them downtown, in the Palafox vicinity, and then in the Gregory Chase vicinity east of 110, and then on 9th Avenue at Brenton Airport. Like, that's where all the crashes happen. The heat map for crashes in the city are those two locations. Everything else is blue or white. The blue is best, white is middle, and then red is the bad. Those are the two places where we have all the crashes. So solving the red light running problem, particularly at, you know, Brent Airport and 9th, and then downtown, is likely to make a good difference. And their estimate, by the way, is that you can cut 60% of the red light running just by putting the lights in and putting up the signs. That people will see the signs, go, ah! You know, and they'll slow down, or they'll avoid going through there on a red. And then over time, you can cut down another 65% from there. So, for example, the straight-through total violations per day that they observe were 375 in the observation period. The estimate is that that can cut down to 150, basically the day you install the lights, and down to 53 after a couple of months of adjusting. So they can cut it about, you know, 80% by putting in these two measures, which is pretty good if that works out. Won't be to zero. We'll never get it to zero, but, you know, 80% reduction in straight through red lights. And then there's other ones like the left turn, getting stuck in the intersection, you know, pulling in too far and then not going, you know, right turn fast without stopping at the red, those kinds of things. Those are less of a problem than the straight throughs, because the straight throughs are the most horrifying, right? 555 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hi, I'm Mansfield Coe from Pensacola Hardware. We are your best local and regional resource for industrial construction and hardware supplies. Daily, we meet the needs of Pensacola's construction companies, providing superb knowledge and code-compliant products. We specialize in concrete and masonry tools, fall protection products, and tools and supplies for the HVAC, mechanical, plumbing, electrical, and glass trades. Give us the opportunity to show you why we are Pensacola's oldest and best hardware and construction supply company. Pensacola Hardware, 20 East Gregory Street, downtown.
Join us today for the Pensacola Expert Panel. The folks from Foo Foo Fest will be here to tell us about the unique events coming up as a part of the 10th anniversary of Pensacola's Foo Foo Festival. Get all the details, make your Foo Foo plans by tuning into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10:30. It's the 10th anniversary of Pensacola's Foo Foo Festival. Bigger, funner, artier.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Keep climbing.
Picked off! He brought it down with one hand!
Got it.
Goes down! Sack!
This is your home for FSU football.
Watch it deep downfield! Punch! Touchdown! FSU!
you!
Rolling to his left, they're going to throw. End zone, picked off!
Game over!
Catch live coverage of the Seminoles all season long, right here on your home for Florida State football.
Listen to FSU football on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620, brought to you by Pensacola Hardware.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. The Great Gulf Coast Arts Festival is Friday through Sunday in Seville Square. Explore with over 200 artists and craftsmen and enjoy the music and food. GGAF.org for more. The Pensacola Greek Festival is Saturday and Sunday at Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church on West Garden. Celebrate Greek heritage with food, music, dancing, and family fun. PensacolaGreekFestival.com. Find more events and submit yours at NewsRadio923.com.
Guy Benson talks to the big newsmakers every day from 2 to 4 before Pensacola right now on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Smile, you son of a...
Every day, you need just a little bit more Iggy Pop. Just a little bit more than you needed yesterday. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Donald Trump Jr. will continue testifying today in the New York civil fraud trial involving him, his father, his brother Eric. Yesterday, Trump Jr. testified that he did not recall being involved in compiling the business's financial statements, but he did say he had the responsibility to sign off on those documents. He said he relied on others like former CFO Alan Weisselberg to vet the documents. A vote to expel Republican Representative George Santos from the House has failed. Yesterday, the Republican-led effort to oust Santos fell short of the two-thirds vote needed to expel a member of Congress. And the toxicology reports are back for Matthew Perry. It's being reported now he did not have fentanyl or meth in his system at the time of his death. That's according to a TMZ report, which says the initial reports show he tested negative on both of those substances. A more in-depth analysis is still being conducted.
What were the two he tested negative for?
Fentanyl and meth.
Okay. All right.
And apparently, I guess it takes longer for some of the other.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting one that, you know, some tests take longer than others. I also wonder if there's not like a standard protocol that all deaths get tested for those two. And I'm kind of curious, you know, why those two particularly. Fentanyl, I totally understand, but I wouldn't necessarily think of meth as being the one that you test everybody for. But, you know, OK, interesting news note, David. Thanks so much for the update.
Local talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3. WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.